28 years ago last April, Bob Scott was responsible for getting me in Wichita. He had to hear me preach for a while, but he finally escaped. A number of years have passed, and it is not my responsibility that he has chosen to submit himself to that again. But I'm glad he's here. If you're a visitor this morning, this is the final installment in a series of sermons that asked questions about our traditional notions of heaven and hell, about what words like sin and salvation might mean in the 20th century, and about what kind of last judgment we do or do not believe in. And now we come to the most difficult concept of all, the idea of God. And it won't surprise anyone that I face that prospect with some uneasiness. First, because of a line in a successful Broadway musical that says, people aren't interested in talk of God, because if that's true, I'm a loser for the next few weeks. But I don't like that thought, so clearly I have some doubts about the accuracy of the song. I think there are people who do want sometimes to talk about God, especially if they feel free to be totally honest, if they can feel the argument has not been settled in advance, and if they can be sure that there is not some iron creed which they are not permitted to challenge. Most of you probably had a church background somewhat like mine, in which you were not encouraged to ask really tough questions about your faith, and especially not about the most exalted part of all, the concept of God. If you were young and innocent enough, you might wonder aloud one day, if God made everything, then who made God? But you would still be hushed, gently but firmly, because no adult had an answer for your question. God was the unchallenged premise, the given, the one reality we were not to interrogate. I must have learned that very well, because I can still remember vividly the first time anyone seriously disturbed my complacency. I was 16, and she was 16. The girl who had come to our small town to visit from the great and sophisticated city of Tulsa. She came along on our church party, curious, no doubt, about a 16-year-old boy who already had plans to become a minister. She asked some questions about why I wanted to do that, and then, without any intention of being flippant, she asked, in all seriousness, did God create us, do you think, or did we create him? I had just enough sense to know it was a good question, but not enough to know how to deal with it. So I pretended to be deeply shocked. Or maybe I really was, and can no longer imagine how I could have been. But she was right to ask the question, because it is a fair and valid question. And faith is not very strong or grown up that has never struggled with it. In fact, it is right to ask any question one can think of about God, because if there is such a thing as God, and whatever he, she, or it may be, No protection is needed from the likes of us. My guess would be that any such reality would be happier with a man like Job, who dared and cared enough to stand up and scream insults and challenges at God, than with some of us who never miss church, but have also never spent more than 1 minute thinking or reading or talking seriously about the idea of God. There may, of course, be a good reason for that. It's quite possible that we're far more comfortable with the concept of God if we don't look into it very carefully. Perfectly happy to hear the word spoken in sermons and in scriptures, so long as we don't have to consider how terrifying it would be if there were something to it. That's why I had Cress read the strange poetic vision in Isaiah. When the prophet had his vision of God sitting on a throne high and lifted up, with a train that filled the temple, and with those odd composite creatures called the seraphim all around him, calling to one another and saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The earth, the whole earth, is full of his glory." At which moment, the foundation of the temple shook, the house filled up with smoke, and Isaiah was scared to death. "Woe is me," he said, "for I am undone. I am a man of unclean lips, and I have looked upon the Lord." It all took place in his head, I am convinced, and no camera could have recorded it, but it raises interesting questions. What if there really were a God? What if one day our eyes were suddenly opened, and for that moment at least we were certain of God's reality and presence? What if we found ourselves here in church one Sunday and our posturings, our songs and readings and sermons were to be interrupted by the clear, unarguable presence of God? What if the symbolic veneer of our religion were peeled away? I think that instead of rejoicing, there would be terrible discomfort. At least that's how it was often pictured in the Bible. When someone had a vision of God, the typical reaction seemed to be, "Go away, sir. Please, I'm too shabby a thing to be comfortable in your presence." So I wonder if an actual appearance of God might not be harder to take than the chilling proof that there is nothing. Most of us have managed to insulate ourselves against the numbing cold of nothingness anyway. We may live on the edge of the abyss, but we are not without our comforts. There is so much to fill our lives, and especially if we have the means to get those things. If, however, there is a God, if God is more than a winter pipe dream, more than an opium for coping on our way to annihilation, if God, terrible in his holiness, were ever to become immediate and real, what would happen to us? To be searched out in that light, so that all our little vanities and lusts, our envies and greeds and gluttonies were to be exposed? If a whole lifetime of small betrayals were in a moment revealed, wouldn't we go mad with embarrassment? Because I think we are all more atheists than we admit, except to the very closest friend. Atheism makes our pretense and our foolishness bearable. But if we knew there was God, and he made us know it by presence, it would be more than we could stand. Maybe this is what the old biblical writers meant when they said, "No one sees God and lives." The idea being that the naked presence of ultimate goodness would wipe us out. And none of us would escape, because none of us can exist for more than an hour except that in some way, great or small, our hearts betray us. It was Pascal, I think, who said that if everyone knew the innermost thoughts of everyone else, there wouldn't be two friends left on earth. So who really wants to turn the ceremonial camouflage that religion so often is into a devastating sense of reality that would knock us to our knees? My guess is that Isaiah was, quote, religious, unquote, pretty much the way we are. He believed in God in the abstract. There were certain logical premises that seemed coherent to him. He could even tell himself abstractly that if God exists, God must know everything. But to experience that God knows everything, the whole shameful story with not a single lie hidden, turned out to be so devastating that he was reduced to a cry of terror. How do we define God? And are the definitions simply one more way of hiding from a reality that, if it truly exists, would make an intolerable judgment on our lives? I saw a survey by some Protestant denominations in which Sunday school children were asked, "How do you think of God?" And then later, their church-going parents were asked the same question. The astonishing thing was that, with few exceptions, the adults said pretty much the same things the kids had said in slightly more sophisticated language. God is somebody who watches, a kind of heavenly peeping Tom. It makes one think of that religious order of women who, until fairly recently, had to wear robes in their shower so that, as the rule of their order put it, the good God could not see them nude. Or is God a divine delivery service waiting for our call like a pizza parlor, ready to bring what we want to the door. I'm always amused at Jacob's self-serving definition of God in his prayer in the book of Genesis. He had had quite a dream one night, and he felt sure that God was in that place. So when he woke up the next morning, he said, "If God will be with me and take care of me and feed and clothe me so that I can come home again in safety, then the Lord shall be my God." In other words, do what I want you to do for me, and I will accept you as my reality. Are you sure you would want to know how much so-called faith in God boils down to that when you examine it carefully? Or God is a kind of magician, a puppet master who pulls the strings from heaven and constantly interrupts the drama down on earth, saves one person in the plane crash and lets 150 others die, so that the relatives say jubilantly, "God was looking after our Tommy." A kind of celestial hitman who, for reasons of his own, takes your child in the flu epidemic and lets four more in the block live on to a ripe old age. We'll have a sermon in this series about that definition of God. But for now, it's enough to say that it's related to a satire written by W.H. Auden, British poet, about those who look at God that way. "Oh God," they say, "put away justice and truth, for we do not want them. Leave thy heavens and come down to our earth of water clocks and hedges. Become our nice uncle. Look after baby. Amuse grandfather. Escort madam to the opera and be sure and help Willie with his homework. Introduce Muriel to some nice, handsome naval officer and we will love you as we love ourselves." When our definitions come to that kind of self-preoccupation, we should quit trying and simply fall silent, agreeing with Spinoza that to define God is to deny him, and agreeing with that brilliant 16th century preacher, Richard Hooker, when he said, "Our soundest knowledge of God is to know that we know him not as he is, and that our safest eloquence concerning him is our silence, when we confess without confession that his greatness is above our capacity and reach." But of course, Hooker was talking about God, even as he said we shouldn't. And the rest of us go right on trying because we cannot help ourselves. We want some words that make sense, some sense of an idea that we will never grasp completely. So I offer one more. I was writing a review the other day of a book about Samuel Butler, that eccentric, provocative 19th century English author who spent a great deal of time thinking about religion. in one of his essays called God the Known and God the Unknown, he attempted a definition of God that may work for some of you and probably, even if you have not thought of it, is your practical definition. So listen carefully. The theologian, Butler said, dreams of God sitting above the clouds among the cherubim who blow their loud, uplifted angel trumpets before him and humor him as though he were some despot in an oriental tale. But we, Butler is being modest, he means I, we enthrone him upon the wings of birds, on the petals of flowers, on the faces of our friends, and upon whatever we most delight in of all that lives upon the earth. We then can not only love him, but we can do that without which love has neither power nor sweetness, but is a phantom only. We can express our love and have it expressed to us in return. And this is not in the building of stone temples, but in the caress bestowed upon horse and dog and kisses upon the lips of those we love. In short, Butler expands one of the definitions in the New Testament, God is love, to God is love and friendship and beauty, the sum total of all that is good. But no one definition is ever complete, and there is always someone of equal insight to propose another. Some like, as I do, the word transcendence, the word that means more than, the word that says life is more than we eat and wear, that life makes sense only when we give ourselves to some intangible things greater than ourselves, when we are humbled by the mystery. Einstein remarked once, he who can no longer stand wrapped in awe is as good as dead. So how long has it been since any of us stood like that? Whatever it is, I would say that is the amount of time that has passed since we last encountered God, with whom, as Jacob did one night in that strange old biblical story, we shall wrestle again next week. Please come back and help.